Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a January 18th edition of the MSP Initiative. MSP Talk, it is mid-January. Your vacation's over, guys. Let's get off the couch and let's get back to work. MSPinitiative.com, here's where everything that we do lives. This very session is being recorded. It will be on MSPinitiative.com. We post these on YouTube. We have a podcatcher. Make sure to follow us. We have MSP Community Minds this year. We did our first inaugural event of this last year. We have two scheduled for 2024, April 17th to 18th in Nashville and July 24th and 25th in Denver, Colorado. This event is a little bit of a different format, not like a trade show floor and everything else that comes with a normal conference. Straight up panels and workshops, right? We want people who are living out there in the channel, in the trench, doing the real work, telling you what's happening. Right. So check out MSP Community Minds. By the way, costs you absolutely nothing to register as an MSP. There's no $3.99, $4.99, $9.99 costs. All you got to do is get there and we will take care of you for a couple of days. So check that out. We have our MSP Community Block Parties. We did six of these last year and we expect to do a ton more again this year. So you can see we have a lot of the ones posted already that we plan to be doing. We'll be in Europe. We'll be in US. We'll be in APAC. Continental block parties. Again, these are totally about the community. We hope you enjoy them. They are absolutely a labor of love. But man, have we gotten some pretty good experiences over the years. We have some community offers. These are just deals that are hookups that are out there. If you want to take advantage, feel free. And thanks to Jen, who's behind the scenes on this session, we have posted almost 300 events going throughout the year. So feel free to jump between, all these different, 12 months here and figure out what's in there. There is plenty of places to go and things to see. I assume more will come as time goes on. Cause not everybody has their dates, lock, stock and barrel right before you get to Jan 1, but I digress. That is all of the housekeeping on MSPinitiative.com. Check it out. If you don't know how to spell initiative, type it into Google. It will, spell check you. All right. Today's guest. Is a person that I've known for quite a long time, Jerway from TimeZest. I'm waiting to hear all about his Buccaneers. So here's your time. Go for it.
I'll tell you what, it's sad, George. I wasn't even able to watch the game. So I saw the score. I didn't realize it was even in our hometown. I was traveling, so I was a little out of touch at that point. But you need to tell me about it. I mean, I saw the score, buddy.
I can tell you about the weather. It was supposed to be torrential downpour. We got a little sprinkle. Was definitely, where it was snowing here in Philadelphia. It was a nice warm, like 68 degrees in Tampa. So that's what I can tell you about the game.
All right. Well, I guess maybe like the training conditions weren't quite right for your guys. Like they were ready for cold
weather. Excuses. No excuses. This team wasn't prepared to make a run. I could give you all the stats about teams that go to the Super Bowl and lose and what happens the year after. It's not good historically. So the fact that this team made it back to the playoffs the next year is actually not normal, but I digress.
They had a good season. They had a great season.
Beginning part of it for sure. And I'll tell you this, looking at the opponents for next year, since we're already moving on to next year in our mind, Tampa is in the schedule again. So it seems like we like to meet up every once in a while.
Now, I hear you flew down for the game. Jen shared that with me. So
Yeah. In and out. Look,
that's how football, I'll help you out. I'll make you feel a little better.
Okay.
I'm an Oregon Duck, so I went to school in Oregon. I'm born and raised in Oregon. I went to University of Oregon.
I don't think I knew that. I'm learning new things here. Okay.
If you watch the college series of things this year, you can imagine. I think we created our own situation, right? We really needed to beat Washington at least once, but that was a little painful.
Well, I just a reminder, if you didn't, put that together. I mean, we had Chip Kelly here for, three or four years.
Yep, absolutely. He was a great coach for us. Sorry he didn't do so good for you. He started.
He went to the playoffs 2 years in a row, and then it kind of got bumpy from there.
Yeah.
Man, how sports is just embedded in America. It's definitely a part of it, especially here. That being said, welcome to 2024. I guess we're past the Happy New Year thing, but yeah, so I'll just say welcome to 2024. It's the first time I've talked to you this year. You've been around for a long while in MSP land, right? You've seen companies start from small, go to big. I know, I'll let you tell your story a little bit here, but you were there in the early days of ConnectWise, right? And before it became the company that we all know it to be today. Which is great, because like I always hear stories about that time, right? In my mind, right, from where I sit, like once you get to about like 2011, 2012 to like 2019, like that was a good run, right? That's when there was a lot of explosive growth in MSP land across the board. But you were there in the beginning days, right, before we even got to that kind of period. So I don't want to tell too much of your story for people who have never met you or don't know, kind of your journey. Give them a little bit of a trip down memory lane. You don't have to get too crazy, but it would be good to get some background.
Yeah, no sweat. I appreciate it, George. Well, we can even go back a little further if you want. I'm a little older than most that run around this industry. I got into business. I got out of school, university, University of Oregon, as I mentioned, in 94 is when I graduated. I got into banking first, and that was boring as hell. So I got out as quick as I could. But what it got me to is I had a good friend in banking software. Oh. And he said, hey, we need guys and gals like you that know banking and know what the hell we need to build in this application. So you should come on board. I made the transition. It wasn't very good pay. But I made the transition because I was ready for something new. It got, like I said, pretty monotonous just doing loans and that kind of stuff all day long. So, but I was a manager of branches at the time, and I went into a sole player role when I got into banking software. I did that for about 8 years, 9 years-ish. So I started in banking software in 1999, right before Y2K. Were you doing anything in tech around Y2K?
I was building computers in my basement at Y2K.
Then you didn't have to worry about, the nuclear plants closing and shutting down over Y2K and the banks crashing and all that.
I remember it, but I really started in, the tech business really like in 2000, 2001. So it was right after that.
Okay.
I remember a lot of people made a lot of money doing Y2K.
It was nuts. We had a whole SWAT team watching the systems that night, drinking beers. Probably shouldn't have been doing that if things were going to crash. But, hanging out, just watching systems, making sure everything, all the code that we had worked on to make sure. I don't know why people are writing code in like 1980, 1970, not thinking about the end of the whatever, the century.
Yeah, I agree. Like,
I had no idea why they didn't have this foresight to imagine that it'd be around for at least 20 years. But maybe that's tech back then. I have no idea. But yeah, there was a lot of work at that point to build systems so they could support that year turnover. And we did that for a while. I was in management positions in banking software. I did product management. I was actually fortunate. I met someone that you may know in 1999, right when I got into banking software. It was an EDS company. I don't know if you remember that company, EDS, at all. But we were this division of EDS, and the person that ran our department, our area, kind of our product area is the best way to put it, I guess, was a guy named Santo Canone. Did you ever meet him when he worked at ConnectWise back in like 2006, 2007?
I don't know if I did. Name sounds familiar, but I don't think I really ran into him.
Yeah, so Santo, really great guy. He became my mentor pretty quickly at that stage. And one of the greatest things he did for me is he moved me around. He basically said, hey, I'm going to give you a chance. If you want change, I can give you change. And he moved me every couple of years into different positions. So I got the pleasure to be able to go and see the business in a lot of different areas.
Okay.
Product management. I did implementations, big bank implementations, which was really interesting. Also did strategic alliances and then ran a software development team back in those days. So The challenge, though, that started to hit me is, number one, he abandoned me. He left the company I was at, which is an FIS company, Fidelity Information Systems, and he moved on to ConnectWise. He had known Arnie from the past, and Arnie was starting to get ramping up, and the business was beginning to grow quite a bit. I think they were, when he went on board in 2006-ish, it was probably about 30 people at that time. And so, you know, we stayed in touch. I kind of continued on my journey in banking software. What really started to hit me right around 2008 is, man, this is really dinosaur technology. We were working on mainframes. I mean, this is like Unisys systems, COBOL 72 code is what we're working in. I mean, it was
by the way,
2008 too. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but by the way, like most of the banking industry still runs on that COBOL.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. And there's some crazy things we had to do to make it live in a client server environment for the tellers and various bankers. They wanted the new GUIs, right? But we couldn't deliver that. So we had to create this kind of middleware environment. And it's actually part of the reason why I left is because it just got overly complicated. There was a lot of lipstick on the quote unquote pig. We were just kind of trying to make it pretty and there was a lot of complexity to what we were doing in the background, and just it was fragile. Things would break, and I think it was one of the biggest learning lessons I had in building high quality technology is not easy. There's a process to it, and it takes really smart and good people to really understand and have that experience. Because it's easy to sling code. It's really hard to build a stable application that can scale and that you can work bugs out in a short period of time. That there's an art to that. There really is. And so I've had the luxury of learning that process. I learned a lot of it in those years. And then so in 2008, Santo called me and he said, "Hey, I got an opportunity for you." And this is a funny story. I haven't actually told this story much, actually, as I think about it, this part. So he first called me, gosh, it may have been the end of 2007, to be honest with you, maybe beginning in 2008. And he said, "I got this opportunity for you. It's related to this community stuff we do." I'm like, "Hey, anything you got, I'm interested in. Let's chat. I'm ready to get out of banking software." Like I said, dinosaur technology. Thought I was going to die with the dinosaurs. And so it was actually Janine's job.
Oh.
In community. Wow. Okay. But here's the deal. He found Janine and he's like, "Hey, sorry, Jarrett, I got to put you on the shelf. I got to put you on ice. I found a better candidate." I didn't know it was Janine. I had never, no idea who she was at that point in time. And he found Janine. He put her in the role. And obviously, smart move on his part. She has so much more experience than me. She's the right person for the job. All those things. And basically, I had to sit for another, I don't know, I think it was maybe 6 months. He and I maybe stayed in touch a little bit between that time. But right around the middle of 2008, like the summer, he called me and he goes, "Hey, I got another thing for you." I go, "Okay, what is it?" He goes, "It's I need you to run the sales team." Hang on, Santo. I've never run a sales team like this before. I kind of did it in banking. You know, we had a branch and I had people reporting to me and we had to do loans, and that was sales related in that regard. Did some cold calling in those days and whatnot, calling people at dinner time. That's not a good idea. I don't recommend that. And, you know, he just basically said, "Look, I trust you. I've thrown you in the deep end a couple of times. I've seen you float, you swim eventually, and I'm willing to trust you with this." So I was super excited. I sat down and had lunch with him and Arnie. I had an offer days later and I was ready to move my entire family actually from Orlando to Tampa for it. I was the first ConnectWise colleague that made the move. And now we've had hundreds, right, of making that journey from another city and coming to Tampa to work with the team. So yeah, 2008 is when I joined, at the very end. I joined in September, 2008. And, I inherited a team. I had about 7 or 8 people on the team. One of those team members is with me today, Eric Brown. So Eric, I inherited him on the team. Great guy. He's done great work in the industry. And he was actually the very first hire I made at TimeZest.
Wow.
So, and he's been on that journey with us now for a few years. So really, really good stuff. So, I mean, maybe I should stop there. I don't know. That's a lot.
No, I mean, listen, that's, you know, I always find it interesting how people ultimately make it into like the little sandbox that we all play in constantly have to remind people, like, MSP IT services provider are like a sub industry, right? Under the larger, you know, technology conversation. And listen, you know, we are affected, you know, probably down the stream of the big guys, as you all know. I was actually just talking to someone yesterday about this. I'm like, listen, every year, everybody takes a guess, right? Like, what's going to happen this year in the industry? Like, you know, we know every 3 to 4 to 5 years, like, the new marketing term comes up. For, went from hosted then to the word cloud. It went from security to cybersecurity. Now we're in AI land, right? Like, everybody comes up with a new thing every once in a while that everybody latches onto. I think a lot of people, myself included, felt, hey, you know, we're hearing all the financial talking heads say, you know, like, there was going to be a little bit of a downturn there at that, you know, somewhere in 2023. It didn't happen, right? I mean, largely, like, kind of stayed kind of in the middle. I was just saying to this, you know, this conversation yesterday, I was like, hey, it's not about politics, but it's an election year that changes how the markets work, that changes how people view, you know, math, right? I think they said that they're planning to lower the interest rate 4 times this year, right, at the Fed level. You take that together, all of the investment people, they're gonna pivot a little bit, right? And that changes the way that the industry works because, you know, how that money kind of, you know, trickles in from multiple avenues. So, you know, like, usually when that type of stuff happens, you see more aggressiveness, right? And new things, new startups, investments in existing companies, of course, M&A is constantly happening. There's never a dull moment. I'll give you one prediction I made, and then I would love to hear kind of what you think 2023 ended up being versus what you thought it was going to be. And maybe we'll get what you think 2024 is going to look like. I think there's a little bit of this crossover happening where, you know, there's still some layoffs happening, right, up at the bigger company level. So that hasn't stopped. It just happened in sections. And, you know, so there's a lot of people that kind of got bumped out of corporate America a little bit. But this concept of, like, the gig economy, right? I can do 2 or 3 or 4 things at the same time, you know, without having, I could be anywhere, right? Could be, you know, we always joke about the beach, right? But I could literally be anywhere and be doing these electronic-based jobs from anywhere, whether it's consulting, you know, whether that, you know, bumps into IT MSP services. I think some of it could. I believe because of that idea, that way of generating revenue, that you'll see net new MSPs will be created than companies that go out of business or get merged. You know, is that good? Is that bad? I think as an industry, right, you always want to see things growing, but I digress. That's what I think is going to happen, you know, in 2024, right? People are going to say, hey, if I got to do multiple things, no problem. I'm going to start something new, but I don't have to just live in one lane. I can do 2 or 3 or 4 things at the same time. That's my prediction.
Well, there's actually some history to support part of that. And you were around in 2008, 2009. You had your MSP back then, right? Mm-hmm. You still have it today, but you had built it in those times. Okay, so now imagine what you can think about what I was facing when I joined ConnectWise, right? So end of 2008, what was happening at the end of 2008?
Oh, the whole financial mortgage thing, right? And that kind of blew up everything around it.
Yeah, I think I got out of banking software at just the right time. It didn't land good. There was nowhere to land, right? If you can imagine what was going on in those times, it was just starting to hit at the very end of 08, the real, like, the big layoffs were happening. I remember seeing like HP, 50,000 people, IBM, 40,000 people, like these massive numbers that we aren't seeing right now. We are seeing some big numbers. I'm seeing like 20,000 here, 15,000 there, all from really big Fortune 100, maybe 1,000 companies. But it's not at the rate that we saw in 08, 09. And, you know, it does feel a little different. So what, for those that weren't around in those times or like out in work, right, in those times, it was basically everyone was seizing up. No one was buying anything. No one wanted to make a decision on anything. They were all saying, you know what, we just got to keep our heads down, hold on to what we got, preserve cash. We're not buying software. We're not doing technology projects. We're doing nothing. And it really seized. I remember it vividly, right? Because I'm in sales at that point. I'm running sales. I just got my arms around some things. And Q1 of 09 was just miserable. It was, how was it for you guys? What were you guys facing?
I feel like, you know, again, I'm putting my MSP hat back on, right? I mean, at that time, it was a little, you know, like, I'm not going to say it was exactly like pandemic times, but there was a lot of, hey, how can we do more with less? If I need to consolidate, you know, like, how can I get my cost bearings down? Of course, if you have not made any investments at that point, you had to replace stuff in order to get it to a smaller footprint. But I mean, listen, the lights still had to turn on, right? Doctor still had the doctor, lawyer still had the lawyer. It was just about being a little bit more lean, right? To figure out how you can keep the lights on with, you know, and see if you could trim back a little bit.
Yeah, that was two things for me. Number one, as you mentioned, the fact that new, you know, MSPs will probably get created this year. It was very clear to me one thing that happened in that scenario was there were some really good talented technology people that were out of work because these big corporations were having to lean up. And those technology people were looking around like, well, what should I do? Well, I know technology, I can hang a shingle and I can get an MSP started. Why don't I do that? I saw a number of great companies get built out of those times, because if you got no other opportunities, and my recollection, and I assume this is yours too, is like the whole economy seized up. It wasn't like there was anywhere that was safe. I mean, healthcare was probably safe. You know, there's maybe a couple of areas, but there were just layoffs happening everywhere. This wasn't just a tech problem. This was like tons of industries were letting people off. We dipped quite a bit, and it took a while to recover from all the lost jobs. I mean, it took like 2 years to recover from all the lost jobs, maybe a little longer if I remember right. Like, it was 2010, 2011 before we got back to the employment levels we had at the end of 08.
100%,
so it was intense, you know. What did they call it? They called it something. It was like the second big recession that we had. Can't remember exactly. It was, there was a name for the recession we had. It was a massive one. We'll have to look it up. Maybe Jen can look it up while we're chatting here and give it to us.
I know Keith Nelson will remember. He was around during that time.
You're going to call him out. I got you. I see how this goes.
He sent the message in. So I just, you know, wanted to make sure I saw you, Keith. I got you, buddy. One thing's for sure, right? To your point, a lot of good in hard times is when technology seems to prevail, right? Like, new ideas come up where, you know, and they start building. You know, entrepreneurs don't stop. Good economy, bad economy, right? And I would argue that most of the most explosive companies from a technology standpoint usually started in an economic downturn. He says, when you are an MSP or TSB, provide measurable business value, enhances business objectives. These times are great opportunities. Be a part of the business your clients cannot live without. Yeah, I agree. 100%. That was Keith Nelson, by the way. One thing's for sure, though. The way people work and live now, right? Like, take a page out of Gary Vee's book, Gerway. The younger people coming up, right? Like, some people, you know, like the whole, hey, you went to high school, you went to college, you found a career, you started in professional business, right? Environment. A lot of people aren't finding the value on the education track, right? Like, they're just going into the workforce without that. And, you know how many people end up with a lot of student loans and sometimes in the six figures, you know, just to get through undergrad. But like, these people are finding new revenue streams that didn't exist back in the 2010s, Gerway, right? Like, social media and influencers and like, fire up an Amazon store, right? Like, you can get creative, right? So that's what I'm saying, right? There's different ways to generate revenue now that seem to be a lot easier because the internet and technology just became kind of a little bit Fisher Price, right? For the everyday person. And I just think like some of those people now today in 2024, they're going to come down and say, I can start a technology business way faster, way easier, and be selective in the people that I want to serve in that way. Where like, if you started MSP in the mid 2000s, or even the 2010s, it was not exactly an easy lift.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think it's a little bit easier. There's probably a little more competition out in the market these days. But I do think, the unique part of building a technology company, specifically an MSP technology company, is you can pretty quickly trade time for dollars, right? Like when we're building software, we got to put all this effort and energy into building something that has like thinking of a home, just like windows and doors and the roof. You gotta spend some capital, whether it's sweat labor that you're putting in yourself or otherwise. You gotta write some code, and you have to have something that does something that's like minimally viable to someone to use, right? But an MSP, or someone just working on technology per se, like a consultant to businesses, can start quite quickly. And I think what has also happened, if you think back to like what we needed to have in place to start a business 15 years ago, the solutions to get to starting a business with the SaaS applications we have these days are super cost effective. In fact, oftentimes free in the early stages of building a business. So I do think that some of that has gotten easier. Maybe I think some of the pioneers that have done it, this conversation we're having today of people back in 2008 that were being let go during the Great Recession, that's what the name of it was, were basically paving the way to show people in what they can do, right? If you're smart with technology, you can become a consultant. And those that are good enough to lead a team can also go further and start hiring other techs and other team members to build up that team. I think that's a pretty common pathway for people. And I think it has gotten I wouldn't call it necessarily easier. I bet it's easier in some ways and hard in others. You know how that goes, right? It's like easier in this way, but harder in this because there's a little more competition and whatnot. But who knows? I think, good people will find work in this industry. And, if you're talented with technology, honestly, I think the other thing too that kind of strikes me, George, is you have to be a technology expert in a different way today. That's probably the biggest thing. If you think about, a technology company starting in 2005 versus 2024, right? SBS servers were a big thing in 2005. You didn't know how
Remember.
to install those and manage those. Exchange servers were everywhere, right? On premise and in your data centers. The world was a lot different. So the skill set of the person that's going to be successful today and the kind of business they build is different than the past. Like, for example, I've talked a lot about the following, which is you needed to have, a good deal of technical acumen back in the past. You had to really understand the technology from how it interoperates, networks. You needed to know, kind of system-based information. I think the future is more kind of CSP related, cloud service provider related, where you're having to pivot more to being a business analyst, a solution specialist, where you're doing more to just stitch solutions together. Just imagine like Teams. Like Teams to me is the new SharePoint. SharePoint and intranets of the past now is Teams. And that's the opportunity for us to do like really good advisory work on how you can be productive with the Teams environment, how you can create workflows or business process. And none of that has to do with tinkering with the boxes, right? That's all business process. That's all system stuff around how do I take a problem in a business and simplify it? How do I use technology to make that problem go away? Or how do I use technology to get more performance in this business? And I think, Keith is exactly right. If you think about your power bill in a business and then your technology bill, I mean, they're pretty close to each other, right? You pay your power bill, you're going to pay your technology bill right after that, because how do you run a business these days without technology? It just, I mean, you can. I mean, we can do paper invoices again if we want to. I see it sometimes. Like, where do I see it? Like the bait shop. Now, even the bait shop runs with credit card these days. But, for a long time, I was getting like handwritten invoices from them, and they do it in the back, and it's mostly a cash business and stuff like that. Just, people have gotten away from that for a lot of reasons, right? So I think just the fact that every business needs technology is a big win for this industry for sure.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I don't know. There's still some MSP IT service providers that are running the business on Excel and QuickBooks and shared mailbox. I mean, I hope that it's, matured a little bit, but that's out there still.
Yeah. Well, look, in 2008, that was probably 50% of our customers coming in, our prospects coming in. It was like, hey, how are you running the business? We just kind of get right into QuickBooks and produce our invoices. And, we do this Excel thing. Like you said, it was really haphazard for sure. It was a little challenging. And we had a good deal of homegrown. Like, hey, we grew our own PSM. Like, okay, that's cool. How's that going for you? And, a lot of times they were talking to us because the maintenance of it just got, significant, right?
Labor of love, right? Got to constantly be, doing things to make it happy.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a tough way to go for sure. I'd seen that a couple of times.
For sure.
But when you had nothing and there wasn't like a commercial solution off the shelf for you, you build it yourself. I mean, that part was logical. The part of like how far you continue on that journey. I mean, there's obviously a lot of challenges with that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the name of the game is scale, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, this is a good part of the conversation now. So you saw you learned about the MSP business by entering a software company that services that industry, right? And you're working in a software company now, right? Times S. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But and you know what? I even do something here. I'll bring Keith on. Keith's company is a little bit not traditional too. His company also writes software. So I feel like software companies work a lot differently than the consultative nature of IT and managed services, because you are building something that doesn't exist, right? You are writing to the customer's requirements. There's some crossover, but it's not exactly the same.
Yeah, it's just a little different. Obviously we have a responsibility to build code that works, and stays up. And, the systems are our own problem if they go down versus, hey, arm's length, Verizon's down, nothing I can do, right? When our technology goes down, we have to respond. We have to have all hands on deck to address it. So there's some definitely differences. There's a little differences in how we build our organizations. Like for example, around sales and marketing, there's some differences, but there's a lot of similarities too. I mean, there's a lot of crossover of what an MSP has to do to build out and scale out a sales team. It's somewhat similar to what we have to do in the software side, right? You gotta get the leads. We all need leads. There's only so many ways to get them. And there's only so many ways to have a chat with people. But I will say, what I find pretty significant, and I'll compare this even to ConnectWise days, where the sales cycle and the process of having to, educate someone on what we do was significant, right? There's a good deal of coverage when you think about a PSA on the CRM side, all the way through billing and whatnot, managing agreements and the service tickets and projects. I mean, it covers a lot of landscape. But what I would say is the challenge we had to get someone convinced to try out a PSA was nothing compared to what an MSP has to do to convince a business owner to turn over the IT keys to their business. Like it's a whole nother ballgame. To me, it's the closest thing to enterprise sales. It's very, very challenging, like to build that trust. How do you build that trust over the phone? Is that how we're going to do this? Like, it's like really, I think, fundamentally, quite frankly, the reason why so many MSPs struggle with sales is because of that first issue. The complexity to get to hear and convince a business owner in town to trust you with all of their IT, which they know can completely bring their business to their knees, is a high bar. I mean, that's a really high bar. Obviously a PSA can kind of do the same thing, but you can try it out a little. You can, in implementation, you can pull the plug at some point and go, nope, not interested in going any further. This was all a test. We're not live yet. We're not going. We're not comfortable. There's a kind of call it a 3-month cycle of doing that work. When you sign the contract with an MSP, you're committed. Like there is no turning back, right? In so many ways. So I just think there's a whole nother bar. I mean, would you agree, George? You own an MSP. It's different, isn't it?
I've said many times, I'll say it again now. The way I experienced it, and again, we're in 2024, but I started in 2000, 2001, right? So the way that I experienced the first 10, 12 years of this was a little bit of a experiment, you know, like figure out what works for other people, glue it together, take it apart, put it back together again, change the model, change the plans, change the offerings. It was like a constant testing board to try and figure out what was the right way to do it. And not just the right way to do it, but to actually scale it and in a way where you weren't burning people out, right? Like, that's a big problem in this industry, right? This whole, I'm going to get phone calls at any hour of the day. Doesn't matter if it's holiday, night, weekend, whatever. I feel like it's changed a little bit now. Different options have come up. Different resources have come up. Different companies have popped up to help support some of the challenges around that since. But it is a tough business. It really is. And by the way, part of the reason it's tough is because, you know, even though we're all in the technology business, software, IT, MSP, doesn't matter. It's a people business. That's what it is. And trying to get the right people, like you were saying, hey, your mentor moved you around, right? Like you probably got to figure out what you were good at and what you weren't, right? A lot of people don't get that opportunity. They get thrown into a chair, and if it don't work out, they're gone.
You know, part of it is, I'm going to make one sarcastic comment. You don't have to be stupid like Jerry Jones and hire Buffet Mike McCarthy back to run a failing organization. But seriously, when you're selling MSP services, and I harp on this all the time, you're selling a cost. You're saying, give me control to your network and pay me to do that. And that doesn't resonate well. When you're selling business outcomes and business solutions that align, then you're no longer a cost center, you're a business partner. And you also survive the ups and downs of the economy.
Yeah.
And I gave an example. When C-17 was being delivered in the middle of the economic challenge, they wouldn't get rid of us because we were making sure Boeing got paid 90 to 120 days faster from the Air Force than they did before. It had nothing to do with cost per workstation. So there was a measurable business outcome, measurable. And you could do that at every level. People go, you can't do that with small business. I do it all day long.
Yeah.
You can do it all day. If you tie it to something with hotels, like we talked about, George, we talked about our solutions make the turnaround at the front desk faster and quicker. You're a big road warrior, George. You get delayed, you get patted down 8 times by TSA because you're a known Russian Eagles fan. And so you get to the hotel and you're going, I don't want to hear any, I just give me a bed, right?
Yeah.
And so one of your whole stay starts with the first check-in.
Can you tell me something, Keith? Why do they keep needing my ID when I check in for a room? Like, what's the big deal? Just give me the room. I'm paying you money. What's the problem here?
Well, there's some compliance with your credit card statement and so on, but they can be prepared for that. I mean, we're starting to work with OneChain to integrate your check-in with electronic ID. That's a state-by-state issue.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Okay.
Like you go into the Hilton app, you can check into your room, get the digital key, not even talk to anybody at the front desk, walk straight to your room and go in.
Right. And we're trying to bring that to smaller hotels. So that's a big thing.
That's a good point, George. I need to start using that more.
I'll tell you what. I did my trip this past weekend, right? I went from Philly to Orlando, drove to Tampa, slept for a couple hours, drove back to Orlando, flew out to South Carolina, was in South Carolina for 10 hours, then flew back to Philly, right? That being said, that hotel, so my check-in to the air, other than TSA, was all digital on the app for the airline. My car rental was completely digital. I didn't have to stop and talk to anyone at a desk. My hotel room was digital. I went straight to a room, didn't talk to anybody at the front desk. So like, it's doable, right? Like the experience now is you don't really even have to interact with a human being if you don't want to.
But let me, when it comes to MSPs, you're going, when I can go, so George, you check into hotel. Mm-hmm. You have a horrible experience at the front desk. Now you're going to pick apart every part of that stay, right?
Oh, it goes downhill from there for sure. Yeah.
For sure. So if I can do a measurable thing to my client and say, I'm going to make his check-in easier and make his interaction with the support team easier, you're a little more forgiving.
Yeah, I mean, listen, absolutely. I think with any business, right? You get so many shots at things going wrong before things, you know, before somebody either gives up or things blow up, right? So, you know, if you take that shot on the first step of the journey, pretty bumpy out already, right? And you have to like work double as hard to try and bring it back up to just okay.
Exactly. And so when you start talking in those terms, instead of I'm selling you some MDR, and then they're going like, I don't even care what you're talking about. But you start talking in the terms of I'm going to enhance your customer's customer experience. I'm not selling to the hotel. I'm selling to their customer, which is the same thing they're selling to. Saying, this is where I'm focusing. Now, all of a sudden, you become part of the delivery. You're not taking over their IT. In fact, the other thing when you said that, I always think of there's a term that's outlawed at Vista. IT owns a network, because that's the dumbest statement in the world. Sales owns a network. Production owns a network. IT supports the network for them. And when you walk around with this attitude is, you're not going to do that on my network, the real attitude is, I'm going to make sure you can do what you need to do on your network. And we have to change that thought process. You say, I'm here.
The modern day version of SaaS is the same concept, right? So flipping over to what TimeZest does, right? I mean, part of the problem with the manual way, right? Of like, hey, I called you, you weren't available. Hey, I was trying to figure out a time to meet with you. We went back and forth. The tickets that, you know, you just want to just, you're 800 replies deep. You're like, why don't I just pick up the phone at this point? Cause like, yeah, this is dragging on for too long. Like what their whole experience builder was or is to streamline that whole thing. So you can just get to the business of whatever you're trying to do. Right. Instead of spending human being time doing plumbing and basic stuff, I am spending my time actually interacting with you in some way, right? I mean, I don't want to take the whole value prop there, Jerway, but that's how I take it.
Yeah, I mean, I think on this whole theme that Keith is talking about with businesses is that we have to constantly be thinking about how we can improve our service delivery.
Yeah,
in all of our businesses, and MSP has to do it just as much as the hotel business that he's serving in that case. And I think, honestly, I think there's been kind of this little bit of a movement away at times from service delivery optimization. I think that, you know, we all got pretty distracted with security issues over the last, call it 6 to 10 years. You know, we've got MSPs out there rebranding themselves as security companies, which is fine. But what I find happening a little bit is I just feel like kind of the old boring, like no one loves it. Some people geek out on performance improvement of an operation, right? But not everyone does. If you don't have someone like that in your organization, you're probably going to struggle. Someone has to be geeking out all the time about optimizing the operations of your business, whether it's a hotel company or whether it's an MSP. And if someone's not doing that, I have this feeling for whatever reason that that's not happening enough, then you're losing the game of business, in my opinion. So what we're trying to do is we are trying to help that flow, which is isolate this problem of you've got to deliver support, but you've got to find a time to deliver that support. It's not something you can do in the background, right? You can't run a script to fix the problem. You can't just go reset a password and let them know to try again. You have to have a conversation sometimes to fix a problem. And to negotiate that time has been a very haphazard process for a long time. And I think that when we look at technology, like when Calendly emerged, and then we start seeing our doctor's offices and our dental offices booking with us through text messages and, hey, pick a time, here's a calendar. You know, you've got to do that in an MSP technology business too. Like you can't bury your head. You can't go run from this problem. There's a simple way to address it. And, you know, it relates to this, but all kinds of other areas around operational improvement. You know, the great Paul Dipple I think has done this industry a lot of justice around, we're trying to make those things simple, little building blocks of here, you should optimize your business here and there. And has really built, quite frankly, a roadmap for MSPs to say, what does a great MSP look like? What does their operations look like in so many ways? Like, just the framework is perfectly documented in the work that service leadership has done. And where are you at in that journey? Are you level one or are you level five? And if you're level one, okay, no problem. That's just where you're at. Let's work on getting to level two. And here's the things that level two looks like. Here's what a little more maturity around this operation looks like. And so, I don't know, I just find myself needing to preach this a lot of, hey, yo guys, operations matters. You know, I know it's boring. I don't always love it myself. But there are plenty of people that geek out on it, and you just need to find one person that's constantly geeking out on ops and is doing things every day, every month to try to move your business forward and optimize. And that doesn't need to be time zest. It just needs to be a way of thinking.
But if it's
You brought up some excellent points. Number one is there's no need, you know, when I fix your computer, that's a very, I need you to know your computer and made it work to your satisfaction. So sometimes we do too much automation. You know, a big part of our tech's job is also sales, marketing, and making sure customers know the value. When you brought up the part about cybersecurity and everyone's getting into that, I look at those and I sit in a lot of those webinars, and that's why I don't go to a lot of conferences. I go, we're all selling to ourselves. Mm. We're all creating these great MSSPs and no one knows what it is. I always joke. I said, people ask me, what's an MSSP? And I go, someone that felt insecure and needed to add another S. It's an undefined, we're selling to ourselves, and the end user doesn't even understand what you're talking about. Yep. You're going, what we're talking about has to relate directly to their business in their terms. Do not pretend like you're the smartest guy in the room. So
yeah, I think security gets you in the conversation, but you've got to explain why zero trust matters, or like, you've got to, like, here's why we take this approach with zero trust. It's for these reasons. And I think that there's got to be a more of a business conversation between that. And we struggle with this. Like, this is the lifelong struggle in technology, right? We easily get to, here's what zero trust does versus, you know, like, here's why it matters in your business. I think it's been a common problem for since the car was built. I don't know.
Well, I think that's the part where you start by mapping out their workflows and showing them where breaches or failures interfere with their daily workflow. And you know, you hear all this pushback, well, there's phishing campaigns that'll cause you to get breached. And the first everyone goes, all my customers say I'm too small for that. You go, because you didn't explain it right. You go through their process and you say, hey, you know, you submit orders to the city every day and if that was compromised because you're on a list that they can't accept emails from, how does that affect your income flow? And you point that out, that's what I'm fixing. I don't go into all the long under the cover stuff. You're going, I look at
back to the theme of operations for a second though, but in my opinion, in 2024, the more time you put into the middle of steps, the better the chance that somebody does, like, goes off the track that you want them on, right? Like, for example, back to the, hey, I booked my airline, I selected my seat, I checked in, like, short of the security experience, all I need to do is turn up at the gate and beep, and I'm on the plane, right? Or the hotel. Like, the quicker I can present somebody with the avenue, the faster it is. Let's talk about sales for 2 seconds. If I'm really interested in something, I go online and start to, you know, start look around, I find something I like. If I need to know more information, the faster I can talk to someone, the higher the chance that I actually go through with that transaction on the other side of it. The longer it takes for me to get the information I need, the better the chance that I go somewhere else and I get that answer from, you know, somebody who is willing to respond faster, right? So that concept is, hey, when you talk about, and you know, we've heard the word automation for years. I guess AI is like the evolution of that. I don't know. But efficiency in the way that you are, you know, piecing that workflow together, Keith, and slimming down the amount of time it takes for people to get to what they're trying to get to your way, chances are the experience is better. Everyone's getting where they're trying to get to faster. And you actually either A, generate net something net new, or B, take somebody existing and keep them happy, right? Those are the two things that every business needs to worry about. I don't care what business you're in, how much revenue you're generating and how much churn happens on the other side are the two ends of the sandwich that you can't avoid in any company.
So let's explain for me why this matters so much. They tie together for me, okay? So that service delivery optimization builds a better client experience or customer experience, right? And guess what? 90% of the business all MSPs get are through word of mouth, because that trust bar is up here, right? We talked about that earlier. So if the trust bar is up here, you really think you're going to get a lot of business from the person that Googled you on the internet, and like you're like learning from Adam, like who the heck they are? No, it's because a business owner in town works with you, and they go to their other business owner friends and they say, you're having a technology problem, you ought to use my guy, George. He's amazing. I never have a problem. It's always great. And so they refer you in. And before you know it, the trust bar that you've got to achieve now, you're at least kind of mid road, right? You just have to take it 50% further. And that, I think, is very, very clear and evident in this industry, that the vast majority of our business comes through referral. And we've got to do something to keep that flywheel going. You've got to have a very clear understanding of your CSAT. You've got to have a very, very clear understanding of, is your operations causing you the lack of sales? And so, for me, that's the starting point. Like, if someone isn't thinking about customer experience, you've already shot yourself in the foot on sales. Okay, that's my belief. So,
well, because you sold something doesn't mean that they actually got the outcome of whatever the sale is. Let me give you an example. We just recently revamped some of our process here. And so like an order comes in, instead of waiting for a human being to see that order and send a message out saying, hey, congratulations on your order, please book some time with us so we can help you get this working. Like, that delay is human being time. I'm like, well, hey guys, well, how come once the order is done, we immediately automatically send them, hey, here's the link, book time, right? Like, just that delay is unnecessary, right? Like, creates this, you know, it could be a weekend, could be whatever, right? And then we set up an automatic check-in where it's like, hey, you didn't book yet. I just want to follow up with you to remind you that we're waiting on you. So like, please take the time to click this link and pick a time that works best for you. Because if you only send that one time and you don't follow up, they could disappear. And then all of a sudden they're, what happened, right? It takes human being to go back and figure out, you know, and look for that. So like, just those two spots that we adjusted on the front end of our process, dramatic change.
Yep. Little things. This is not a massive thing, is it?
But I'll tell you what, the fact
I've said it before, times Nordstrom's still in business, Kmart's gone. So Kmart did automations quick, let's make, and you're going, people, the more we get technical, the more people are starving for the personal touch. That's what they want. I want to know, it's not how fast you solve a ticket, it's how fast I know you care about it. And it's the same thing in the introduction cycle.
I didn't do the science, but there is science behind, you know, the time barrier, right? Like they say in sales, the longer it takes you to get back, the, you know, each 24-hour period that goes by, and sometimes even smaller periods of time, the percentage that person engages goes down dramatically, right? Like for support, everybody talks about SLAs, but generally speaking, if you get back to your whoever the person is, depending on the priority of the issue within a reasonable time frame, they're going to be okay. If you take too long, they're going to say, what took you so long, right? So for me, you know, I'm trying to always claw back the time human beings are putting into what, you know, processes that they can spend with somebody else rather than the minutia of it. And I think that, to your point, Jerway, I think when I, you know, back in the 2010, 2011, 2012, that's when I first got into ConnectWise Land, for whatever it's worth, like people talked about that and they concentrated on it. And then like their they got distracted in all these other areas and they forgot to go back and keep that part working right. So I can't stress enough, especially when you're after a premium outcome, a premium result, right, Keith? That experience, if you take your eye off of that, you could find yourself in a bad place, you know, before you knew it.
I could tell you, and we can charge more, and you know we charge more. I'm going to say it right, because we don't give you a ticket back that says we got your ticket. We call you. And people are willing to pay for that extra service. We call you and says, we got your ticket. I've sent it to so-and-so on our team. He's looking at it. He'll be online with you in a few minutes. That personal touch, I don't know how many people have called me and said, stop sending me tickets. We don't want to see them. It's too much. And so I think as your MSPs will find out, people will pay, like I said, people will pay to travel like George in the lounge and in the first class and all that because it's an experience.
Well, once they give me that private security experience, let me know and I can bypass DSA.
Yeah.
Go ahead, your way.
Yeah, Keith, what I'd say about what you pointed out, you know, around the experience versus time, my argument would be you got to do both, okay? So, like, time to resolution freaking matters. We can't, like, step away from that. But I agree with you that if you can add in a personal touch along the way to a quick resolution path, you're going to win the day all day long. And I think your point, Keith, was, like, don't just focus on resolution, focus on the experience, too. So I'm with you. But what I'd say to the audience is you got to do both. You got to solve both. You can't not. You got to kind of hit it from both angles. It can't be just do one thing and you're going to magically solve customer experience. You've got to do both, in my opinion.
No, I agree.
100%. Jerry, where do people find more information about TimesZest and everything you guys do for MSP land?
Yeah, it'd be really easy. Just timesz.com. We just recently released some integration to Halo PSA. We've got a webinar coming up on that. And we also released APIs. So if anyone's interested in integrating and you know, improving that flow of their operations, we're there to help with that too.
Love that. We love building new things. We could probably take another hour of this, but I want to appreciate everybody's time. Jerway, thanks for jumping on. Always love learning, you know, about the journey. Keith, as always, you know, another NFL season for both of us in the tank, man. So, you know, just gotta have.
I don't know if you guys are gonna be smarter. I'm waiting to see what you guys do with your coach. I was really disappointed with what we did.
Well, you know, we'll find out soon, right? But lot of good talent on the street. I hear Belichick may end up in Atlanta. So let's see. Anyway, I could only imagine if Jerry Jones and Bill Belichick had to see each other every day, how that would go.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I was hoping for Harbaugh. I was hoping for Jimmy to come back at GM, but I live in a fantasy world.
Yeah, really surprised it's not full on retirement there out of you know, New England, but whatever.
Yeah, 100%. Good luck to your Bucks in Detroit this weekend, your way.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. We'll try to watch the game this time, huh?
Sounds good, my friend. For everyone else, this session was recorded. We'll get it up on MSPinitiative.com in a little bit. Thank you for watching or listening. We'll catch you on the next one. Thanks, guys.
Take care.